did Leonard's defense was hidden from his lawyers.
The only thing I'm guilty of is struggling for my people. I didn't kill those agents.
It was not a fair trial. The conclusion reached by Federal Appeals Judge Gerald Heaney, who stated the prosecution withheld evidence favorable to the defendant and the FBI used improper tactics in extraditing Peltier and otherwise in investigating and trying Peltier's case.
I'll be an old man when I get out. If I get out.
Leonard Peltier spent more than 46 years in prison, some of which was in solitary confinement. He is now 78 years old and in rapidly declining health. There are concerns that he is not receiving adequate medical treatment and his condition could be fatal.
They're giving him the death penalty by leaving him in that type of an environment. The man needs medical treatment. He needs to have access to medical treatment. If they're not going to give medical treatment to him, they need to release him as soon as possible.
Amnesty International is calling on President Biden to grant Leonard Peltier clemency before it's too late. President Biden has a chance to rectify a case that has troubled many people for decades.
A video produced by Amnesty International about the in-jailed indigenous leader Leonard Peltier, who on September 12th turned 80 years old. Peltier's supporters are hoping President Biden will grant Peltier clemency before he leaves office in January. 24 years ago, President Clinton faced similar calls. On Election Day 2000, I spoke to Bill Clinton when he called into our Pacifica radio station, WBAI, to get out the vote. I asked him about Peltier's case.
President Clinton, since it's rare to get you on the phone, let me ask you another question. That is, what is your position on granting Leonard Peltier, the Native American activist, executive clemency?
Well, I don't have a position I can announce yet. I believe there is a new application for him in there. And when I have time after the election's over, I'm going to review all the remaining executive clemency applications. And see what the merits dictate. I will try to do what I think the right thing to do is based on the evidence.
That was President Clinton almost a quarter of a century ago. In 2012, I had a chance to speak to Leonard Peltier by phone. At the time, Barack Obama was president. Leonard, this is Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!
Hi, Amy, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. I was wondering if you have a message for President Obama.
I just hope he can, stop the wars that are going on in the world and stop getting killing all those people getting killed and give the Black Hills back to my people and turn me loose.
Can you share with people at the news conference and with President Obama your case for why you should be, your sentence should be commuted, why you want clemency?
Well, I never got a fair trial, for one. They wouldn't allow me to put up a defense. And manufactured evidence, manufactured witnesses, tortured witnesses. The list just goes on. So I think I'm a very good candidate for after 37 years for clemency or house arrest, at least.
That was Leonard Peltier speaking to me in 2012. We're joined now by Paul O'Brien, executive director of Amnesty International USA. He recently wrote to President Biden urging him to take a number of actions before leaving office, including granting clemency to Leonard Peltier. We're going to go through your demands, Paul O'Brien, but let's start with Leonard Peltier, who has been in prison for almost half a century now. Why are you calling for him to be released?
Hi, Amy, and thank you for your steadfast work on Leonard's case over the decades. Like Amnesty, we have been calling on administration after administration to do the right thing by Leonard. He was in hospital in June. He was in hospital again in October. It's time to give him a chance to spend his last days with his family and with his community. He's been incarcerated as long as Joe Biden has been in national politics, and we all know how long that is. President Biden only he doesn't have to pardon him. He just has to give him clemency so that he can spend those last days with the right people. And he can send an important signal to the Native American community that will fracture some of the divisions that are still felt over these issues.
And Paul, for those people who are not familiar, could you explain the difference between the pardon and clemency?
Well, clemency doesn't have to pass a ruling on the actual decision. It simply is an act of compassion by the president to say he has served enough time. As you said on the earlier piece, this has essentially become death penalty through incarceration. And if President Biden, who says he's opposed to the death penalty, wants to do the right thing by Leonard, he will say 50 years is enough. It's time to let him spend his last days with his family.
Painful to watch. I was just going to say, Juan, it was painful to watch yesterday. I mean, it's become this tradition over the last few decades for the president, right, to pardon turkeys. And yes, President Biden was out pardoning turkeys. I think they were peach and blossom yesterday at the White House, sparing their lives. But talk about the seriousness of this, Paul O'Brien, as you talk about a signal to the Native American community. President Biden just went to Arizona to ask forgiveness for the U.S. history of how they have treated Native Americans in residential schools. Leonard Peltier was in one of those schools.
That's right. Right now, it feels to many of the folks that we're talking to that the relationship between this administration and Native American leadership is really fractured. And this would send such a positive signal. Some time ago, I stood alongside some of those leaders outside the White House calling for Leonard's release. Many of us were arrested on that day, and the administration simply refused to hear what these remarkable leaders in the Native American community are saying, which is, if you want to show that you are genuinely committed to healing this relationship, you will take steps on Leonard's behalf. So far, nothing.
And Paul, I wanted to ask you about other things you mentioned in your letter, the issue of those folks on death row for federal crimes. Under President Trump's first term, he oversaw the execution of 13 death row inmates, executing the most federal death row inmates of any president in more than a century. Talk about who is awaiting a death sentence now.
Thanks. Yes. And those 13 executions happened in President Trump's last 6 months. That's what may be coming if we don't see President Biden taking action now. So right now, there are 44 men still on federal and military death row. One of those cases, Billy Allen, he was 19 when he committed a crime in 1998. There were deep flaws in his case, no DNA evidence, clear racism in his case. And yet at the age of 47, more than half his life, he's still there. So what we are asking President Biden to do is something he said he was going to work on in 2020. He said he was going to abolish the death penalty. All he's done is put a moratorium during his administration. But that won't mean anything once his administration ends. President Trump can simply end that moratorium and return to what he was doing at the end of his administration. So we need President Biden to commute those 44 sentences now.
Also, President-elect Trump has vowed to reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy. In what ways could President Biden help restore asylum at the border before his term ends?
Well, this is probably the greatest human rights crisis that is coming at us now, because President Trump has made clear he is going to immediately start engaging in mass deportations. President Biden, again, promised a human rights approach to immigration, and he has singularly failed to do so. In June, he passed an executive order which effectively shut down the U.S.-Mexico border and created this numerical cap on the number of people who can seek asylum. There are many very specific things that he can do. During his administration, he set up the CBP1 app. This is an app that people on the border can use to apply. I went down there and met with women, often mothers of young children, living in tents, waiting for this app to tell them when they could legally apply to enter the United States. And they were waiting month after month with no news. What he could do immediately is speed up the CBP1 app process to get more people to legally apply for asylum, particularly for vulnerable populations. But he could do so much more as well in these last couple of months. He could immediately stop expanding detention centers. He could shut down problematic detention centers and end the contracts of the companies that are running them. He could order the release of vulnerable populations who are in detention. He still has time to surge resources to address some of the backlogs that are now being experienced. And everything that he doesn't do is going to make it easier for President Trump to fulfill his promises to initiate the biggest deportation in history.
Paul O'Brien, you've also called for the closing of Guantanamo. Explain.
It's time, Amy. There are still 30 men there. President Biden has a window of opportunity right now. He can transfer all the detainees that are still there, already cleared for release, not charged with crimes, to countries where their human rights will be respected. He can halt unfair military commissions and help to resolve the pending cases that are there. All this can be done if he commits to closing Guantanamo once and for all during his last days in office. It can be done.
Finally, Gaza. Paul O'Brien, you're executive director of Amnesty International USA. You've said change course on Gaza, stop arms transfers to the government of Israel in order to protect civilians and ensure U.S. weapons are not being used in violation of international law. Senator Bernie Sanders, in the largest collection of U.S. senators, several dozen U.S. senators, they voted to stop arming Israel, but that wasn't enough. It wasn't the majority of the Senate, Paul.
That's right. And this is what the United States must do now. And President Biden must show more leadership on this. It's been weak rhetoric and weaker action since October 7 of 2023. He needs to send a clear message that the United States is no longer going to arm the killing of civilians in indiscriminate attacks that we have documented time and again over the last more than a year now. He needs to use his remaining leverage to get a permanent ceasefire in Gaza. He needs to open up humanitarian access. And these will be the bases, we believe, and he needs to call for the safe return of those remaining hostages. What is happening now to the Palestinian people has happened on President Biden's watch, and he needs to take action to protect innocent lives in Gaza.
Paul O'Brien, executive director of Amnesty International USA, will link to your letter urging President Biden to change course on critical human rights before end of term. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. When we come back, we look at a new short documentary about the execution of a Texas death row prisoner. It's called I'm Ready, Warden. Stay with us.
Our connection is shaky. Drops. The video's there, but it's never enough. There's no substitute for touching your face. There's not much to say while we shelter in place. Love has survived through hard times before. When I think of the things love has endured, I'm willing to wait.
Willing to wait. by Evan Greer, musician and director of Fight for the Future. Greer confronted Republican Congressmember Nancy Mace last week at an internet conference over Mace's anti-trans bigotry. Tune in tomorrow on Democracy Now! When we speak with Chase Strangio of the ACLU. He's set to make history next week, the first trans attorney to argue a case before the Supreme Court. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We look now at a short new documentary about the death penalty that began when a Texas man asked journalist Kerry Blackinger to witness his execution. John Henry Ramirez was a former Marine who'd been sentenced to die for the 2004 murder of a convenience store clerk named Pablo Castro in Corpus Christi, Texas. Ramirez at first asked for a death sentence, saying he deserved it. He admitted he committed the crime. While on death row, he became a devout Christian. He sued for the right to have his pastor lay hands on him when he was ultimately executed in 2022. I Am Ready, Warden, examines the forces of redemption and vengeance by following Ramirez, as well as the son of his victim, Aaron Castro, and Ramirez's own son, Izzy, and his supporters. It premiered Friday on Paramount Plus and is directed by Smriti Mundra. This is the trailer.
We each have our own free will.
I'll never be able to make amends for taking a life. I'm a murderer.
I'll never overcome it.
I was 14. I remember waking up to police sirens and lights and see my father's body on the ground.
This man stabbed somebody 29 times.
The Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles unanimously denied clemency for John Henry Ramirez.
In the interest of justice, our office shouldn't be involved in murdering Texas citizens.
I just had all the anger and hate in the world.
They always said, I'm going to be a better father than my dad.
I don't think if I would have stayed free, you would have grew up to be who you are right now.
John asked me, would you be my godmother? He is just not that person he was then.
Due process was done. Now we're changing our moral judgment.
What will you gain if I die, if I sink into the grave?
You're going to just forgive and that's it? He should pay for what he did.
I made the most changes I could. I bettered myself as much as I could, and that's enough.
I love you.
I Am Ready, Warden, offers remarkable access to John Henry Ramirez, who's interviewed on death row in the final weeks of his life. This is a clip of Ramirez.
One of the courses in the faith-based section, you have to write a letter to your victim. And when I got to the end, I was like, I want you to know you made me a better person. I never meant to kill you, but because that happened, it's made me a better person because it's made some vast changes in who I am, you know? And it's a crappy way to say it, but it's the truth.
For more, we're joined in Houston, Texas, by Kerry Blackinger, investigative journalist at the Los Angeles Times, where she covers the L.A. Sheriff's Department. She previously covered the criminal justice system for the Marshall Project, where her reporting on John Henry Ramirez led her to work with director Smriti Mundra on this new short documentary, I Am Ready, Warden. She's the author of the memoir Corrections in Ink, which details Kerry's own experience serving time in prison in upstate New York. Kerry, welcome back to Democracy Now! This documentary is stunning. It is heartbreaking. Explain how you got involved and the story of this case. The guilt or innocence has been established. John Ramirez says, I murdered this store clerk.
Yeah. So as you said in your intro, the way that I got involved was because he asked the spokesman if I could be the reporter who would witness his execution. I was actually at death row visiting another person for an interview for a completely unrelated story. And the spokesman pulled me aside and said, hey, this guy, John Ramirez, asked if you could be the person who would witness his execution. And I was struck by that. I'd never gotten that sort of request from a person on death row. And so I said, you know what, I will at least put in a request for an interview and see what the story is and where it takes me. And that ended up leading to two stories. One was about one of the legal issues that he had pending, which was whether his pastor could lay hands on him as he was being executed. And that became a national media issue. I wrote a story about that. He also told me that he was participating in a death row radio station, which was a new initiative at that point, still going on. And it was where guys who were in general population were doing an inmate-run radio station that was low wattage and could really only be heard by other inmates on the unit. And they were allowing, the prison was allowing death row inmates to participate by writing to the guys who were running the station, and they could read their words on the air, which was really remarkable because the guys on death row had been in solitary for over two decades at that point and had very little direct interaction with general population people. And this was a rare chance for them to share their words with the broader prison population. But it was also kind of remarkable because it was a station that was run by inmates for inmates. So this is really a window into how they talk to each other when there's no one from the free world listening. And I wrote a story about that. And then Smirti, the director, read that story and said she was fascinated by this character, John Ramirez. And we ended up going down the path of just sort of talking to everyone in his life and everyone who was involved in his case and seeing where the story led us.
Terry, in addition to Ramirez himself, you closely followed the son of his victim, Aaron Castro. But talk about his struggle with vengeance and redemption.
I think he ends up being the character per se who really makes the film, because I think that people, I think that the victims' families are told that executions will bring them closure. And I think that one of the things that we were able to explore in spending so much time with him is whether that is always the case or whether that is ever the case. And I think in his instance, we get to watch him grapple with that in some really remarkable moments on film. He was a really great person to be having on film because you can see his emotions are just right below the surface. And I think that makes him a very evocative character, as it were. I mean, obviously, he's a very real person who shows us some very raw moments of his life.
I wanted to go to another clip from I Am Ready Warden of the county district attorney, Mark Gonzalez, who moved to withdraw the death warrant for John Henry Ramirez, again convicted in 2004 in robbery and murder of Pablo Castro, a store clerk. Later in the clip, we also hear from Castro's son, from Aaron. This is the DA, Gonzalez.
I got with Mr. Ramirez's attorney, Seth Kretzer, and I joined him in a motion, letting the court know why we felt the date of execution should be withdrawn. What I'm hoping is we'll get some direction from a higher court, and they'll say that I have all the authority to withdraw that date of execution.
The proof is in the motion Gonzalez filed today. He's trying to get Ramirez's execution date withdrawn.
For a while now, said that I don't believe in the death penalty. My office is not going to seek the death penalty anymore.
Withdrawing or keeping the execution date is in the hands of the judge from Ramirez's trial. His attorney said,
you can't get a real moment of time to heal properly. Due process was done. Now we're changing our moral judgment. For us, the victims, we thought it was going to end with justice, right? And now ultimately we're looking at possibly no execution at all.
Again, that was Nueces County District Attorney Gonzalez calling for the the vacating of the death warrant, Kerry Blakinger, if you can explain how he joined with John's attorney.
Yeah, this was such a legally interesting case. So John Ramirez had an execution date set in 2021, and that one got called off because of the pending legal issues over whether his pastor could lay hands on him as he was being executed. So that issue went up to the Supreme Court. When the Supreme Court sided with him and said, yes, the pastor can lay hands on you as you're being executed, that meant that he won that aspect of his case, but it also meant that he became eligible for an execution date again. In the interim, the district attorney, Mark Gonzalez, had come out saying that he was no longer in support of the death penalty. However, his office still ended up asking for an execution date, and he later said that that was because one of his assistant district attorneys had asked for it routinely without consulting him and without his knowledge. So at that point, Mark Gonzalez tried to have the date recalled, tried to have it called off, and this ended up turning into a months-long legal battle. And it turned out that the trial court judge, determined that he didn't have jurisdiction to just cancel a date for that reason. There are specific legal reasons in Texas that you can recall a date, and the district attorney changing his mind turns out not to be one of them.
And Kerry, you said in a podcast, reporting this story sort of broke you. What did you mean by that, and what do you hope those who view the film take away from it?
So when I say that this story broke me, that actually the reasons for that didn't even end up in this film at all. But it was one of the most heartbreaking things I've seen interviewing him repeatedly over a period of months. The first time that I interviewed John Ramirez, we talked a lot about his faith because he had the pending appeals about his pastor. And he had this elaborate vision of an afterlife. And he was very firm in his faith. And his idea of this afterlife seemed to give him a lot of comfort when I was talking to him, which was a week before his scheduled execution date. Then that execution got called off, and I think he saw that as a confirmation of his faith in some ways. And then over the next few months, it ended up getting scheduled again. And then there was this protracted legal battle over whether it could be called off. And somewhere in there, I think all the back and forth really wore on him. And by the time that I saw him in, I don't know, the summer before he got executed, he had... You know, he seemed to be in a much darker place. And then I think the last time that I saw him, he started talking about how he hoped that he was wrong and that there wasn't this elaborate afterlife, and he just wished for blackness. And I'm not a person of faith, but watching someone lose not just their life, but like their afterlife, that just felt like one of the darkest things that I've seen in covering death row. So that's what I think about when I think about the ways in which this case has, you know, impacted or broken me.
And Kerry, in the last 30 seconds we have, speaking of impactful moments, when he says goodbye over the phone to his own son, Izzy.
Yes, that is... I mean, that is such a rare moment to be able to capture on film, and obviously such a raw moment. But I think it really makes the viewer think about the sort of circles of loss and trauma that come with every death row case and every execution, because, you know, there's no happy outcomes in this case, in this story, in this film.
Kerry Blakinger, we thank you for being involved with, for producing this film, investigative journalist, reporter at the LA Times. Her reporting on John Ramirez led to her work with the director, Smitri Mundra, on the new short documentary everyone should see called I Am Ready, Warden, now streaming on Paramount Plus. Author of the memoir Corrections and Ink, a memoir. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!, democracynow.org.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
Listen to music and podcasts from CGSF 90.1 FM with our radio app. It's on-the-go listening made easy. You can tune into all our music, spoken word, and multicultural shows using your device. Our app lets you set reminders so you'll never miss your favorite show again. Stay connected to CGSF 90.1 FM through our community radio app. Download the app from the Apple Store or get it on Google Play.